Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey, how do you talk to clients about separation anxiety? You know, and I feel like that's such a large umbrella term, and maybe we don't have the proper tools or communication skills that we do when we're chatting with them. And joining me is, I hope you're all sitting down. So if you're driving the car right now, you better pull over to the side of the road. It's the one and only Dr. Lisa Radasta. How are you, doctor?
I am fantastic down here in sunny Florida, beautiful spring weather. I'm good.
Oh my gosh, jealous, I'll tell you that. But so good to see you. So those of you that are living under a rock and don't know who she is, she's a board certified veterinary behaviorist down at Florida Veterinary Behavior Services. Is that right? Did I say it right?
Florida Veterinary Behavior Service.
Yep. And she's a graduate of the University of Florida College of Vet Med. So you got to do the whole go Gators, right?
Oh, look, I got my blueberry smoothie in my Gator cup.
See, I'm telling you, so loyal. I love it. She's taught after national. She's an international speaker. She's written chapters for textbooks, including Handbook of Behavior Problems of the Dog and Cat, Blackwell's 5-Minute Veterinary Consult, Canine and Feline and Small Animal Pediatrics. She's been featured all over the world in terms of speaking with all the great work she's done. You've seen her on TV, seen her on podcasts, interview shows, the list goes on. And it's our profession is that much brighter having you in it. So thank you for all the great work you do.
Thank you. Wow. Wow. You're making me sound so good. Like it's to be like every morning when I wake up and I do that morning intention where you look, you get bright sunlight. I don't know if you do that. You get sunlight. Adam, I listen, remember all the things that Adam said about me.
Right. Well, it's true. And it's so well-deserved. But so Lisa, I was telling you before I recorded, I do chat with a lot of the pet parents on TikTok live and out with the clients and everything. And they say very like an umbrella term, doc, how do I help? My dog has separation anxiety. So how do you start chiseling a little way as a general practitioner when a client presents to you with that problem?
Yeah. So for us as veterinarians, we want to first kind of be objective. So we see this all the time. Clients will come in and say, my dog has separation anxiety. So I come into that appointment with, I don't know what your dog has. So I can't come into that with your dog has separation anxiety, because if the client knew how to diagnose and treat, she wouldn't be in the exam room. And so I want to be super objective. Separation anxiety occurs really frequently with two things: confinement distress, so crating, being confined in a bathroom, a small bathroom, or just behind a gate, and noise phobia. And if we're going to just play the slots in Vegas, the dog is more likely to have noise phobia than separation anxiety. About 50% of U.S. dogs, 50, like wow. 50, I know, right? That's a big number, have noise phobia. Based on the pre-COVID numbers, now we don't know post-COVID, but pre-COVID numbers, about maybe 25% of dogs have separation. We're going to call them related disorders, because as we know more, of course, we have to make it more complex and change the name, keep people guessing. So I'm going to start to look for noise phobia, and I'm going to look for confinement distress. And also I'm going to ask questions like, does it only happen when you're gone or when the dog is alone? Because separation related disorders can also happen when the dog is confined away from the pet parent. And when I went to vet school, first of all, I didn't learn anything about behavior. I had one course, one 5-day course. But what we did learn was that the pet parent had to be gone for it to be separation related disorders. That's not true. The pet parent just needs to be inaccessible to the dog. So I'm going to broaden my mind as to what these are. And I'm going to think about the two other things that occur super commonly with separation related disorders.
Wow. That is fascinating. You know, and I have never heard of that. Have it been described that way with confinement versus, you know, being away. So that's incredible. Do you think, by the way, do you think that their separation anxiety is more common in this country than in others?
There are no studies that support that. It doesn't seem to be, when I talk to my colleagues, that doesn't seem to be the case. And you know what's interesting is when COVID came, I was one of the ones sounding the alarm. Like, oh my gosh, the separation anxiety we're going to see. I'm like, that just didn't pan out. But what we did see was the COVID puppy. Mm. Man. Those dogs are now 1-2 years old and they suffer deeply from global fear. They might also have separation anxiety, but man, these dogs are suffering from global fear in a huge way.
Wow. It's really unfortunate. You mentioned crating. I want to talk about that too. I mean, we as veterinary professionals, at least in my neck of the woods as general practitioners, we talk a lot about how important it is for puppy training and crating. Do you think we're doing it too much? Talk to me more a little bit about your feelings about crating.
Yeah. So, you know, if I can go back to when I was, before I started my residency, remember when AHA first came out with their vaccine guidelines?
Yes.
And it kind of blew my mind because I was taught you vaccinate every dog with every vaccine till the day they drop dead. They're like 16-year-old dog, barely ambulatory, right? And then they come out with these guidelines and they're like, what? We're going to personalize vaccines? That is really what I believe as a veterinarian's been doing this a long time, we need to do for everything. And so crating is one of those things. What is the skill? What's the functional skill? Be able to be by yourself away from your pet parent and be calm. That's the functional skill that a crate allows us to teach. So it doesn't have to be a crate. It can be a bathroom, can be an X pen. It can be a part of the house, a hallway. Right. The dog has to be able to understand how to stay by himself, but it doesn't have to be a crate. Now, crates help with house training. And you and I both know that house training still to this day, which is shocking, is one of the primary reasons that dogs get relinquished, at least based on the literature, right? To think that a dog or a cat would be euthanized for something that's so easy to fix is really heartbreaking. And so we don't want to set people up to fail with house training. The dog has to be confined really and truly to have house training done in a way that is quick and easy. And so a small bathroom might work, an X pen might work.
Got it. So when you start talking to these clients in the exam room, and I got to tell you, I'm sure you hear this a lot. They really want something quick. They want, oh, can you give me a drug? Can you give something quick? That's where I heard Prozac works or whatnot. I want to do that. But we obviously want to work with the pet owner and, you know, train them a little bit. How long do you go, or what are some of your recommendations before you decide some pharmacologic intervention?
Well, sort of depends, right? So I talk to clients about their urgent needs. And, you know, I was at VMX, saw you, VMX,
yes.
Right? And I sat in a lecture about the spectrum of care. Do you know about this?
It's my jam. Yeah.
God, it keeps blowing my mind, all these things.
Unbelievable.
Right. So when I think about that, that was the way I practiced. But when you get the words, it really makes you think, okay, how can I do this more? Right. And that's the way I approach meds with clients. I just give them the down and dirty. How urgent is this? Like, talk to me. Are you thinking of rehoming your dog? Have you discussed euthanasia with your family? Like, where is your brain? That's really how I talk to them. And I want them to open up, because if the client says to me, look, I've already talked to my primary care vet about euthanasia, my husband and I have talked about it, or whatever, my partner and I, then I'm talking about meds. And I'm very honest. You've come here and my job is to save your dog. My job is to help your dog and to make your dog well and to decrease your stress. Meds are the best way to do that. A client comes in on the opposite end of the spectrum and there isn't urgency and she's never giving this dog up and the dog is a minor problem, then the conversation looks different. It's like, look, yes, I have these meds. The meds will blunt the behavior. Head drugs, I affectionately call them, psychotropic meds, do not fix behaviors. Right? They're more like NSAIDs, how they mask the sign of the disease, right? Like it masks the pain and NSAID masks the pain. So psychotropic meds kind of mask it, which is great, allows us to live with these animals, allows animals to live, but it doesn't fix it. So if a client says, I just want drugs and it's safe to do, and the drug is probably going to help, this is what I say. Look, man, the drug is going to give you about a 50% change on our best day. If you are happy with 50% and you are happy never taking your dog off the drugs, you and me, we're good. Let's get this dog out the door with the meds. But if you want more than 50%, it's not going to happen with just drugs, unless like this is a miracle, unless this is an act of God and you're the rare 0.5% that happens. And if the client says, oh, 50%, I'm fine. Everybody's good. But we have to have the conversation of, and I'm really honest with them. I say, don't come back in 6 months and ask to take your dog off the meds, because I can't take him off because we didn't do anything else. If you want to do management, and medication, you bump your success rate to 85%, at least based on one study. That's a nice number. Right. 85%. That's pretty good improvement.
Yeah.
Right. And then we go down the line. Do you want to do behavior modification? You want to be in the 90%. So we just talk like, this is what it costs in your time, in your energy, in your finances. And this is what these treatments deliver. And when new vets come to me, they're always flummoxed about like, how am I going to talk about this? And I'm like, how do you talk about a block cat? Yeah. How do you talk about renal disease? It's the same. These are the options. These are the treatments. This is what they cost. This is the expense in time, energy, and, you know, and money to you. What's best for you and your dog? It's the same.
Right. I want to go back to something you said that really resonated with me is when you talk about spectrum of care, is how urgent is this? Because I got to tell you, Dr. Radasse, I'm sure you've seen it too, where I've had clients that come in crying, hysterical crying, so frustrated, so upset. And they think that I'm just going to like say no to the drugs or whatever, because they're just, they're throwing in the towel. And I really like that you said that with spectrum of care, because I have had clients, regardless, I've said, I can get you trainers. I know board of behaviors here out of UPenn, whatever you need. Like, no, please, I just need something. And then I said, okay, you know, it could go 50-50 is usually what I say. You know, we have to see where we go. But I do like that you mentioned that, especially from you as a behaviorist, because we are in different times. And, you know, what is the gold standard these days that we talk about? And that you're making, you're what you're doing when you're saying that is you're putting that decision back in control of the pet parent, and we're just helping them guide to make those decisions together. So really, my hat's off to you for that. That's great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And I want to add, you know, like what we also were taught in vet school. This has become like a myth busting podcast, but what we also were taught in vet school was treat the physical, rule it out, right? Rule out all the medical stuff and then treat the behavioral. But why is there any other body system that you treat that way? If an animal comes in lame and vomiting, do you say to the client, we're going to treat the vomiting. When I completely resolve the vomiting in about a month and I do all these tests, I'm going to work up the lameness. No, the animal comes in and you work up as much as you can. Now, if the animal has to be hospitalized and receive fluids, if the vomiting, like it depends. But my point is, you don't wait till something is completely resolved. And I want you to not wait with behavior problems. So let's say we see a lot of animals that come in here with GI disease, a lot, especially Frenchies. You know, they're predisposed anyway, just the difficulty breathing causes that increased pressure and they have a lot of esophageal reflux, et cetera. So we do suspect that there's physical disease for a lot of our patients, at least 50%, I would say. We still treat the behavioral because there's suffering there, right? And you want to treat the suffering. And I look at my clients the same way. Is there suffering there? And sometimes I look at a dog or a cat and I say to myself, I'm thinking through the cases, I'm in the exam room, I'm thinking this dog probably needs one med and some management. But like you said, the client is beside herself. I just am thinking of this little dachshund. Oh my God, you're the dachshund guy. Little precious little baby wire hair dachshund. Like you could
oh my gosh, you had me at wire.
Just mush him up, put him in your pocket and take him home. Yes. So cute, but she's crying. She's like, I'm a prisoner. I can't leave my house. We did two meds. We did a short-term quick acting. So today she can leave her house. And then a long-term antidepressant. So sometimes, and some people will be negative and say, you're treating the client, not the dog. Well, what do you think veterinarians do? Yeah. Like, what do you think they do? We treat people and dogs. We're the only profession that treats two species, and not just birds, cats, but human beings. Because I always say to my doctors, I say, wait a minute, you think the dog's getting in the car with his credit card? You think he's driving? Right. To the hospital and pay it? No, you got to connect with that client. And if she's suffering and she doesn't come back for that recheck because you didn't prescribe that med, that's not okay. You can't help that dog. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. At what point, Dr. Radasse, as a GP, when maybe we get frustrated with separation anxiety, is it time to start referring to you?
Yes, you're going to refer because there's a whole spectrum of vets. Right. We're not homogenous. There's the vets who are behavior nerds who are going to try more. And there's the vets who treat behavior like I treat ophthalmology. I see a red eye. I go, oh, that's it. Go see the ophthalmologist. Like, I don't even touch it if it's red. So what do we do when you're out of your comfort zone? Just refer. And now behavior is so accessible. Come on. There's doctor to doctor telehealth consults. I do them, but so many other vet behaviorists do them too. There isn't an excuse for not getting help. There's no excuse, right? Even if your client has no money, you can still reach out. You can email one of us. I have a vet in Manhattan who DM'd me just 2 days ago on Instagram. Now, I can't completely help her, but I can head her in, you know, I can point her in the right direction. Okay. So refer if you're out of your comfort zone. If you're using two or more meds and you're like, ooh, I don't know what to do. If the pet is at risk of euthanasia, relinquishment, risk of hurting himself or seriously injuring someone in the home, like a child or an elderly person, or maybe, you know, getting out of the yard and injuring another dog, so, or another cat or whatever. So out of your comfort zone, risk, right? And right. Using meds that where you're feeling like uneasy about it.
Yeah. Absolutely love it. Well, this has been fantastic, Dr. Radassa. I can actually, I'm writing notes down. I can listen to you all day. This is incredible. So where can listeners learn more about your clinic and any of your social media?
Yeah. So we are now under Dr. Lisa Radassa. So you can find me on Instagram and Facebook under Dr. Lisa Radassa. We just changed that the other day. You can find me on drlisaradassa.com or flvetbehavior.com. And the website we have our resources under, all the articles, all the vet stuff is the flvetbehavior.com website.
Absolutely wonderful. Well, thank you so much for all you do. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate this one. This got to get 5 stars out of 5, like an Uber driver. Good one. But thanks everybody for listening. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.